Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the USS Afterbuzz, our ongoing mission to seek out new Trek entertainment and boldly go where no after show has gone before.
You're tuning into the destination for TV super fan discussion, Afterbuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Welcome to the premiere episode of Star Trek Weekly. I'm Christian Blatt on Twitter and Instagram, at ChristianDMZ. I have been and always shall be your friend, joined as I will be every week by Carrie Lane, at Carrie D. Lane.
Yes, you guys can find me online at Carrie D. Lane. That's K-A-R-I-D-L-A-N-E. And we're saying, like, stuff we like about Star
Trek. We'll get to that after. Okay. Yeah, just we're doing the... I know, I should have...
I was just so excited. I was right.
This is almost the first time we've all ever talked together.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, we're just kicking the tires, lighting the fires. And Frank Moran, where can people find you? And please explain your Twitter handle.
Oh, it's a terrible story, but you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at HappyGoJackie. It's a bit from an old Ray Romano sketch on Saturday Night Live.
You know what? Now that you mention it, I remember it. Before we dive into Star Trek Discovery, I thought it would be fun if we each took a moment and talked about a favorite Star Trek episode, or movie, or book, or comic book, or whatever. It doesn't have to be your absolute favorite, but I will say that my favorite episode of the original series always has been The Trouble with Tribbles. And to the extent that my mom would always talk about this episode, and where I grew up in New York, it was on at midnight on Channel 11, and we had a VCR before a lot of people knew, and my mom would record it every night, just trying and trying and trying to get that episode, and we finally got it, so she talked it up, and usually things don't live up to the hype, but to this day, I still think that's some of the funniest writing I've ever seen. Carrie?
My story is not as cool. I was going to say, I think mine had to go with the first Star Trek I remember going to see in theaters was Star Trek Insurrection. And I remember thinking it was very cool as a kid, and I only kind of watched Star Trek in patches, so I still remember liking it, even though I wasn't, like, super into the franchise.
Yeah, we were talking before we started, and Star Trek Insurrection isn't bad. It's just not special in any way. So for people who were like, well, you know, you only get a Star Trek movie every few years, some of us were let down. But see, that was the first one you got to see.
Yeah, it was
so
fun.
Great. And Frank?
Just to piggyback on yours, just one thing I did enjoy. I'm always a sucker for time travel when it involves in Star Trek.
Oh, the DS9 episode where they went back to Trouble with Tribbles? Yes, I was a huge fan of that.
I really enjoyed that episode. For me, it's as much as I enjoy the TV shows and the films, I've always been a sucker for the novels, too. Just read a ton of them. And Peter David's, whether it be Imzadi or Q-Squared, either of those probably are tying, or like ones and two, right, for me. They kind of vary. But both use time travel as part of them, and very cool.
So, in case you were wondering, our trek runs a little deep here, which is, I think, the way we should go. So the way that this show is going to work is we're going to talk about Star Trek every week. But to start, it is basically going to be an after show for Star Trek Discovery. But as we alluded to, we're going to talk about Star Trek as a whole, TV, movies, comics, novels, video games, whatever you want. So please share your thoughts with us. If you're watching live on YouTube right now, join us in the chat. If you're watching the archive version, leave a message. We'll get to them next week. Or you can tweet at us at any of our individual handles. I'll start about we'll sort of just go overall impressions. And I really enjoyed this story because, it's been a long time since Star Trek has been on TV, although I guess it's arguable as to whether or not this is going to be on TV because it is going to be CBS All Access. But just from a writing standpoint, this was a very rare TV pilot that doesn't try to introduce you to all the characters, let you know what all the little backstories are, and set up things that are going to happen in episode 8 or 9. It really focused. It focused on the captain, the first officer, science officer. Had to see Sarek. I get it. And it was just like really hit the ground running, and it didn't stop for too much of that. You could see characters that had other lines, and like, okay, they'll be important later. Thanks for not letting us know, you know, who's from a farm in Nebraska. Yeah. Or, you know, it's the stuff that we don't need right now. So I appreciated that. I liked the way it kept moving. And we won't go into the actual story points until a little bit later, but this was a rare pilot that also ends with a great cliffhanger for the very simple reason that it's a rare pilot that is designed to get you all to spend money.
Yes.
So that, you know, and look, the fact that episode 2 is already up, maybe if I didn't have to come here right now, I might have watched it afterwards because I was kind of excited to see where the story goes. And according to Deadline Hollywood, it has already led to a record number of signups for CBS All Access. But let's be honest, it was reported by CBS that it's led to a record number of signups, and they have given no numbers. But that's still very exciting. Just overall, Carrie, what did you think of this? The Vulcan Hello is what this episode is called.
I enjoyed it. I thought it was exciting, and it was interesting enough to be immersed in this world. And I like how you put it of just, you know, they didn't go too much into detail about characters, but you got enough of their vibe. So you're like, okay, this person's interesting, or you want to see more of them later, or, you know, enough about certain characters that you want to know more about them. So overall, I found it an entertaining show.
Yeah. Okay. And Frank, what do you think?
For me, I'm trying to overcome a really initial bias that I have towards this show.
Yeah.
For me, I am frustrated that this time period is where we're locating the new iteration of a Star Trek story. It's like we have already been to Enterprise. We've got the original series. We've gone back so often in the Trek franchise. I would rather them go forward. I want to see what happens after Voyager, after Deep Space Nine. Let's go forward. Go several hundred years. That way you could revisit the Klingon Empire at that time. I feel like this, you already kind of know where the end game is going.
And I feel like it also could be interesting if they were going to go pre-Next Generation. You could still go, you know, like after Star Trek VI. Go, yes, like, you know, 10, 15 years instead of going all the way back here. And in case anyone was wondering, I did a little bit of research. This is 10 years before the original series, at least according to IMDb. And also important to note that this is the Prime timeline, not the J.J. Abrams Kelvin timeline, because they could do that if they wanted to. And who knows? Maybe they'll change their mind at some point. But for right now, that's what this is. We got some great comments in the chat. And, you know, whatever coast you're on, it's pretty late right now. So thanks for being up, watching us, and Woo-hoo. Joining us in the chat. Hesmik says it was too grim and dark. I definitely think it was grim and dark, but I don't know that I think it was too much. I think that, you know, sort of reconnecting with the Klingons, or as they would say in the original series, the Klingons, that I think that it kind of has to be sort of a very dark encounter. But, yeah, I can see that, you know, let's put it this way. This wasn't a particularly kid-friendly iteration of Star Trek. You know, this isn't where you want to start your 5-year-old, like, hey, you might like this show. No.
Maybe like your 10, 12-year-old.
Yeah, but your 5-year-old probably start with the animated series. Yeah. That's just, you know, I have a 2-year-old, so I've already mapped this out.
Yeah, but what I always liked about Star Trek is that, you know, in some ways, especially with the original series, kind of pushed the boundaries in certain topics and great allegories for a lot of the stuff that was happening at the time. And I'd rather see them use that. Let's keep going forward. Star Trek, I feel, is always kind of forward facing. So let's go past where we've been right now and just like do new stories. I feel like going back into these old time periods, you're always just kind of limiting some stuff. I'd rather see them explore.
You know, no, it's a great point. I don't know my star dates very well, but I don't know what the latest story is in terms of the timeline. Like, I don't know if it was the finale of Voyager or if it was Star Trek Nemesis, but it's been, I don't even know how many years. It's more than a decade. Is it been 15 years since we've had anything that continues in that Next Generation storyline?
I mean, I guess the last thing would be from J.J. Abrams' first Star Trek film with Spock.
That's true. Back in time. Spock Prime. Yeah, so that's true. That's sort of but it's we haven't had a story that is solely set in that time in quite a while. So,
well, I like how someone kind of addressed your concerns, Frank, in the chat. Stress-free says, yeah, it's a little boring to go back before Kirk, but I think they want to go deep into how the Klingons came to be such a huge foe.
Yeah, I think that's a great point.
You shrug.
Wait. Yeah. I think it could be interesting. Are you also in the chat?
I'm so confused. I am in the chat.
You're in two places at once. Is that the mirror version of you there in the chat? Anyway, I think it's a good point that maybe they really want to go. Because when we meet the Klingons, they're obviously this adversary. I like this idea that they haven't seen them in 100 years.
Yeah.
I will say that I like that this is at least closer to the original series. I think that they were a little bit handcuffed with Enterprise, especially when it started, that it was so far back and it was so early on. But, yeah, and look, we all heard about a lot of the stops and starts. Like, this was a show that was supposed to premiere in January. This was a show that was supposed to be run by Brian Fuller, and he's still listed as the co-creator of it. But this is a very different show than I think we would have seen. I don't know if it's better. I don't know if it's worse. We'll never know. But it's a lot later than we thought it was going to be. So a lot of that stuff that was going on behind the scenes, for me personally, at least in this first hour, it didn't detract from it. I was able to enjoy it. I don't know if when the season ends how happy I'll be able to be. But it was just... And, you know, look, there's little things that I like. I like the fact that because this is before the original series, we do get the same sound effects and things, and I'm definitely just a sucker for that. That's they're basically trying to get me, you know, and they're like, all right, well, we're going to have the same red alert noise. We're not going to have anything cool. But it's a problem with Enterprise. It's a problem with anything that you've seen that is made in the modern day but set before the original series. Yep. You're like, wow, the technology is so much better. How do they go from having like interactive 3D admirals that they can talk to having a flip phone? You know, and I don't know what the answer is to that. I guess that's one of those things you just kind of have to suspend disbelief.
True. Or you just go forward in the timeline and then you're just like, why put, why
you don't have to do it.
Yeah, yeah. Why put yourself those handcuffs on yourself already? Because you know fans are going to be just nitpicking those kind of things.
Or, you know, just some of the technology is more sophisticated looking and then others, maybe they found that practical. And like to us now, we'd feel a flip device would be so dated, but maybe in their world, it's fine.
Yeah, no, it's a great point. To them, it was seen as sort of the next evolution. It's like, wow, I have this flip device. And when you think about it, like, people text so much now, but what did people do 20 years ago? Well, they called and they spoke to each other, which is a much more effective means of communication, but now we all text.
A little bit, yeah.
You know. Great comment again from Hesmix. Voyager returns to Earth first. Janeway is an admiral and nemesis. See, I knew there was an answer, and thank you, Hesmix, for being there. I definitely appreciate that. Before we dive into the episode, I kind of wanted to talk about, it's attached to what we were speaking of, the look of the Klingons in this episode. I think it's a little bit different than the Klingons mm-hmm. we've seen before. And I think that they're definitely laying a lot of groundwork because they're talking about, did they say 24 tribes are all getting back together? They're basically getting the band back together. And one of those things that I never felt that I got an honest thorough explanation of is how in the original series they're basically humanoid looking, and in the episode you mentioned of Deep Space Nine, everyone's looking around from the DS9 and are like, what do you mean Klingons, where are the Klingons? Yeah. And they look at Worf and he just says, we don't discuss it with outsiders. And I know that they tried to peel that back a little bit, but I still don't feel like I have the thorough explanation that'll make me happy as to why they looked like, you know, just guys that spent too long in the tanning bed in the original series, and then they have, you know, the bumpy foreheads and everything, basically from Star Trek the Motion Picture onward. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, the practical reason
didn't
is
they also have,
budget.
Like, the, yeah. you know, larger head without hair? It was, like, a different kind of shape,
yeah,
too, right?
This was so, a completely different shape.
Yeah, okay.
And we saw some...
No, in the older ones.
Oh, in the older
yeah.
ones. Yeah, they had little bumps, but they were basically people with just a slightly different... You know, and the prosthetics just got so much better. I mean, yeah. The real world explanation is simple, but the Star Trek universe explanation. And I thought it was interesting. These Klingons in Discovery mostly seemed a lot darker. We had our albino Klingon. So I think we're starting to get the, hey, you know what? It's like a whole, not planet, but it's a whole, like, you know, galaxy of people. And in this is what they look like. There's some varying species and things. I don't know. But, Carrie, what did you think of these Klingons when you first saw them and throughout the course of the episode?
I like it, but then it's... I want to believe past the special effects, but part of me is, like, the way how they have to struggle to talk with the mouth implants was a little bit distracting. But I like that the look of them, all it was all the way down to the teeth, the contacts, to, like, the whole face... And I was fine with, like, the overall look of them. Like, they do look like a people. Like, you could understand they look different. And even the insert of the albino one of, like, but they point that out. Like, okay, this is not a normal one. But we'll see where that goes, too, because he points it out. But it felt like it's a bigger deal, but we'll see what else they do with it. And then overall, I thought they looked cool. They do look creepy.
Yeah.
I mean, they're scary. They got, you know, jagged teeth and, like, they could be a monster idea.
Yeah.
Pretty grr face.
There's a lot of grr faces.
Like, right? just very frowny.
There's probably going to be a lot of GIFs or GIFs, if you prefer, of just Klingon grr faces from this
pretty
episode.
Much.
Frank, what did you think of these Klingons?
Yeah, I mean, I guess this is... I mean, the Klingons have been such a subject of, like, what's their evolutionary growth like throughout these series. So... This is certainly this portrayal is very divergent than anything we've seen before. I mean, it's interesting, but it also feels like, you know, then I put on my Trek continuity nerd hat on there. Like, well, then how do they go from original series to the how do they go from this to the original series
mm-hmm. yeah.
to then all of a sudden back into what you see in the Next Generation?
And I think that it's one of those things that Star Trek actually does well is explain things. And if they don't want people to keep asking those questions, there's probably a simple explanation, maybe not satisfying, But you can definitely explain it so that people don't keep wondering, like, well, why do they look like this? And 10 years later, you know, they just look like the same actor who was on an episode of Bonanza the week before. Let's see.
But, go ahead. But just for you, like, say, imagine it wasn't the Klingons. Imagine it was a race, and I don't want to hammer this too much, like, we got to go forward. But just in the sense, it was a race that you didn't know anything about. Because I feel like we already know so much about the Klingons. Is there a lot to be mined from learning their innermost secrets? Or would you rather have a race that you didn't know anything about, and we're discovering that kind of fresh, everybody's kind of on an equal playing field in terms of learning about this new civilization?
Right. I think you run into, and again, it's a problem with being in this time, this part of the timeline before the original series, that if you introduce a new race here, and then it's like, well, how come nobody saw them for the next 50 years worth of content?
Yeah.
You know, there's no real win when you do it like this. And again, as you said, how can you solve that? Just go forward.
Yeah.
From Voyager. Yes.
Another thing with how they look, too, a good point. Sarah in the chat said, I find the albino Klingon to be interesting considering half the Klingons in Next Generation and Deep Space Nine. DS9? Yes?
Yes.
Yeah. Of so many shades of the skin color. So it's interesting that this one, they're generally in the darker brown palette.
Yeah.
You know, there's not a ton of variation.
Yeah, and I wonder what we'll see in
And also the lighting is dark, so we're not totally sure on what shades, but still.
That's a good point. And what's it going to look like when, you know, I'm watching future episodes on my iPad, and it's, you know, everything's going to be compressed to a smaller screen.
I did like how the torchbearer, they got the albino when he shows up to Vi for the torchbearer role. It's like everybody's like, whoa. It's like, well, how did you get on the ship in the first place? You pretty much stand out.
And he has no name. No family.
Son of none. Yeah, I mean, the way that anybody hides himself in Star Trek, he had on a hood. You
know? That's right, yep.
If Khan can hide under a hood, anyone can hide under a hood. Well, let's talk a little bit about some of the specifics of the episode. As I mentioned, you know, we got to see the Klingons at the beginning. And we get to see Captain Giorgio, played by Michelle Yeoh, and Commander Burnham, and Sonequa Martin-Green, maybe? I'm trying. Lieutenant Saru, Doug Jones. Those are really, as I said before, those are the crew we get to know. And I feel like we get to know them each well enough. I think it was very important to see Burnham and Saru's interaction that, like, okay, clearly they're both there to give differing views to the captain.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I felt like I got enough about the three of them, their different interactions with the captain, with each other, and we can find out about everybody else in the weeks ahead. Carrie, did you feel like it was satisfying? Did you want to know more? Or how did you feel about really just focusing on the three of them?
I was good with I feel they're the pillars. They're the main, like, people that are going to be in charge of the ship. So they're the most that might have a lot of depth going on. And it was enough information about them that, and it wasn't like, let me give you an entire, like, 20 minutes of exposition about myself. It was enough little, like, moments of seeing the childhood training was good, the we've been farmed, raised, like, those were interesting. It was like, short, sweet, got it, I get it. The other people, just seeing little bits of them, I was curious to know more about them, but I wasn't like, oh no, I'm missing information. But it was enough to be like, they look interesting, or there's something there.
Yeah, it's like, I feel like I'm going to like these people, or maybe not. Frank, what did you think about mostly focusing on these three?
What I actually liked was right at the beginning. It's always kind of nice to see a Starfleet mission kind of go off without a hitch.
Yeah.
So often when they go to a planet to help out another civilization, something usually goes wrong, and then they get, like, stuck on the planet, and there's a misunderstanding or whatnot. It was just kind of cool to see Starfleet kind of doing what it's intended to do, to go help out a civilization in distress, and actually successfully achieve that by, you know, getting them another water source again.
Mm-hmm.
So that was that nice little cool way to actually, all right, you did a nice little cool little thing for the civilization. Now you're off and running to the next big thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Damn. So, and I like just kind of, I feel like if you're going to be starting this, we got to really invest in these characters. So much like you were saying at the beginning, it's nice not to go scattershot on everybody, but let's just get us a few characters that we can get and really invest in. That way we were really kind of intrigued by where this story is going to take us.
Mm-hmm.
The other casting that I feel like is worth mentioning was Sarek. And that he's played by James Frain, who fans of Gotham would remember as Theodore Galvin, who's also Asriel. He's in a bunch of other things. But I actually was staring at him. I'm like, God, who is that guy? And then it dawned on me. I'm like, he's a guy from Gotham. I felt okay with having them put Sarek in there. You know, sometimes that can be the sort of thing people complain about, is like, oh, why do we have to get these characters from before? But I think, we, you know, just to kind of tie it back to what we knew, he's not in it too much. He's mostly a hologram, and I don't know. I was fine with it. I just hope we don't have a Spock, young Spock cameo too soon. But I was happy to see him. Were you all right with the inclusion of Sarek, Carrie?
Yeah, that's fine. Interesting of someone in the chat pointing out the tall alien, as in, I'm pretty sure they mean Doug Jones, was like Data or the Doctor, a bit of a scene stealer. I thought he was really interesting because it was fun to hear his voice in there and see him in more stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, I understand the point about Data, but you can't say that the Doctor is a scene stealer. I assume he's referring to Doctor Who, because that would be the entire show. But I mean, if you mean Dr. McCoy, he's not really so much of a scene stealer as he's
in
like
the movies.
The
new movies.
Yeah, Carl Urban, yes. Okay, but I'm talking about DeForest Kelly. He's just more of, you know, like a joke machine. He's basically there for one-liners, and it's true. I guess this deals from that. What did you think about seeing Sarek, Frank?
I don't mind it. I guess like with any show like this, you want to be able to give some nod to the greater Trek universe as a whole. To be able to say, like, yes, we are associated in this greater universe, and there are some touchstones for you. So it makes sense, like, of anybody that you could figure out to fit into this that would have a greater implication to the rest of the Star Trek, like the likeliest of choice.
So. Yeah, I think it makes sense, you know, not being somebody from the crew of the original series that's 10 years younger. And, you know, I don't think we needed that.
Like a really old Scott Bakula, Jonathan Archer.
Well, actually, when she talked to the Admiral, I'm like, watch, this is going to be an old Scott Bakula. And then I'm like, wait, he's too busy with NCIS New Orleans. So he didn't have time. But I thought that's where we were going to get, but it wasn't. All right, well, we're kind of around the halfway point in the show, and me personally, I've been very positive, and I don't know how much people like that.
as long as you're being honest.
I'll be very negative, though. The new theme song and the opening, very underwhelmed, and I think that, you know, you don't have to do anything like what we've come before, but I do like the space, the Final Frontier. I like the whole thing. I like to have an upbeat theme, and this was reminiscent of the theme from probably more like Deep Space Nine, where you're just like, oh, just get over with it already, you know, like it just drags on too long, you know. The original show had a great theme. Next Generation, arguably a better theme because it was a little bit more modern and up, you know, and that just moved and it just hit the ground. But I didn't love the theme, and I don't know that it's going to grow on me, because I'm probably going to fast forward through it every time from here on in. So, you know, that's probably on me. But I'll admit I looked away.
I wasn't totally... I mean, I didn't dislike it, but I was like, so that tweet I meant to do.
Yeah. You know what? That's true. Maybe I'll leave it playing because I'm like, all right, now I can catch up.
Yeah, like it wasn't like, oh, fast forward. Yeah. Oh, Sarah in the chat says adores the new opening.
And the one for Enterprise was way too long. And
It might be one of those to hear it like a couple times, because there are some theme songs and shows that, like, after a couple of episodes, I'm so excited. I'm like, oh, it's a theme song, and like, we're here. I mean, this is just the first initial one. I wasn't pulled in, but I'll definitely watch thoroughly next time.
You'll be more patient. I don't know that I'll give it another chance. It was the first impression. What did you think, Frank?
Yeah, I was let down by it as well. I wanted to see a new spin. I don't know if I wanted to see like blueprints of various Starfleet technology.
Oh, I thought that was cool.
You know, I mean, I figured like if any show should have had that kind of opening, it would be Enterprise, because you're really kind of setting the roadmap for the rest of Starfleet technology. Like this, we already kind of know the nuts and bolts of this stuff. We really don't need to. I don't need to see a diagram of suits and stuff broken down for me. So, you know, with little bits of the Discovery kind of flying through in the background. And the music was just really kind of like just like slow and it wasn't propulsive. Like you said, you want something to kind of really get you jazzed up.
Yeah, just to set the tone. Stress-Free K said he or she likes the visuals of the opening. It looked artistic, so thank you. Mm-hmm. It wasn't that big a part of the show. It was only a minute and a half. Maybe it felt like three, but then it was over, you know, and I guess that was the important part. And we saw a couple of interesting things in there. I was reminded consultant Nicholas Meyer.
Jazzed about that.
Yeah, best known for Wrath of Khan. Created by Brian Fuller. So as I mentioned earlier, I'm like, all right, so clearly this is going to have his stamp to some extent. So we'll see. Other than that, there wasn't really, you know, much takeaways. I mean, you saw Kurtzman and or Orsi got credits as producers, but that's kind of the way these things go these days.
I've not been the hugest fan of what either the two of them have done in terms of the film franchise.
Yeah, no, I know. Well, believe me, and we'll because we're not only going to speak about Discovery, we'll probably, not probably, I'm sure we'll do a whole episode where we just focus on the J.J. Abrams movies, which I was able to enjoy to some extent, all of them, even Into Darkness, which people didn't like. So that's just something that, you know, we'll talk about in the future. See, there you go.
Yeah, they're all good.
But not everybody necessarily feels that way. Let's talk a little bit about the look. I felt like, obviously, sure, the ship is going to look a lot more high-tech than the original series, just because of what we're talking about. It was made in the modern day. But what I liked was the look of the uniforms. It kind of splits the difference between Enterprise and the original series.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And, you know, it's just sort of like you can see that as a bridge from what, no pun intended, with the word bridge, that they would eventually get to the classic uniforms. But I don't know, I just felt like it all looked very functional and, I don't know, it's very simple. It looked cool. Mm-hmm. So I liked that, and I thought it was, you know, it was a good stepping stone between the two series. Carrie, what do you think?
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that's good. I liked how their uniforms don't look super high tech, so it kind of gives it that older feel, and the technology of them at their consoles looks good, but it's not, you know, doesn't seem too out of place. It didn't seem too out of place for me. That I was like, yeah, it was fine. Or at least I don't mind knowing it's before what we've already seen, going, well, it doesn't look that didn't. As someone who hasn't watched all the old ones, it didn't bother me as a fan. But I think you made a good point of it's, there are certain things that kind of split the difference. I'm like, yeah, pretty much.
Frank, what'd you think of just the overall look?
Yeah, like the cinematography, I thought was nice. Just like, you know, the way that you get to see, yep, you know, what you know, the ambient light from the exteriors kind of bleeding in. It kind of reminded me a lot of Generations, which my problems aside from that movie, just I thought the cinematography was great, and it was such a different look after seeing you know, Star Trek: The Next Generation airing. Such a different way to be able to kind of show, like, you know, the light from a sun, the way it kind of just kind of filters in to, yeah, like Picard's quarters or anything like that. I thought that was beautiful, and I thought this had a lot of kind of like nods to that. Made me feel the same way about the way they kind of like the golden hues of whatever kind of star system was around kind of bleeding into the ship. I thought that was kind of a nice look.
Right. No, I definitely agree. It looked cool. It looked great. And, you know, it's so funny because you think about it, this first episode probably cost more than the entire first season of the original series. You know, maybe just the spacewalk alone, you know? Mm-hmm. And you're just like, well, you know, a lot of times that happens with pilots where they spend so much money on it. And like, is it going to keep looking like this? But let's just hope. Let's just hope it continues.
Just waiting for that bottle episode.
That's true. But so those can be some of the best ones. So, yes. Yeah. One of the things, very, very nitpicky, but they referenced the saucer realignment. And, you know, we never saw the saucer separate from a Starfleet ship until Next Generation. And so now this is, we're back before the original series, and it's made after Next Generation, a good 30 years after Next Generation. So they reference it. And I'm like, well, then why did they stop making them when the saucer could separate? And it's not even really something we have to all go around and discuss. But that's the little nitpicky things that I find. And I was just like, oh, just don't mention it. But I guess they want to set up the fact that they can do it in case they want to do it. Or maybe they already have a plan. But I'll ask Frank first. Does stuff like that bother you? Because I feel like it might. Maybe it's just me, though.
No. But I also feel like, yeah, I mean, it does bother me when they bring up stuff like that. But then you think, like, well, was there a reason that they kind of abandoned it for, you know, dozens and dozens of years?
Maybe we're going to see thousands of people die because the saucer can separate. So they're like, whoa, okay, hold on. Yeah. You know, it's like a recall on the Starfleet.
Until there's some, you know, Starfleet engineer that says, like, you know what, you know, for the C-class versions of the ship, let's reintroduce this really cool idea they had back in the early days of Starfleet and do saucer separation.
About the uniforms, Hesmix has a great observation. Apparently the shoulder piping is supposed to denote rank. It's more of a question. Why not do a more traditional approach to rank? And Sarah Brockle says the captain's quarters reminded her of Janeway's office too. I was going to make a joke how that's probably sexist because she's a woman and Janeway was a woman. It's probably not that funny. But anyway, apparently Enterprise in the original series could separate, but it was a one-time thing. Once it separated, it could not redock. So Hesmix is just giving us lots of information. And thank God Hesmix is still up at 11 o'clock Pacific time, 2 a.m. Eastern time, or wherever Hesmix might be. All right, so now we've talked so much about the big pictures. We'll kind of go a little bit through the story. And one of the things I liked is something that Frank referenced was the flashback to Burnham as a kid being questioned. And so we're getting the sense also, I guess, half Vulcan, because there's no other explanation for a child being questioned there in that setting.
I was wondering about that because I'm like, is she human and for some reason is with them?
And is super smart, so that
the
Vulcan...
And they're like, should you learn it? And because... So far, other times when we've seen someone who's half, they still have, like, the Vulcan ears going on.
That's a good point.
And I was wondering if she did, and they're like, nope, she doesn't. So then I was thinking she's just a human.
She did successfully do the neck pinch. So, so
From what I understand is that once her parents are dead, then Sarek became kind of like a guardian for her.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so she's kind of, like, raised alongside Spock for a little bit, at least. So that's, you know, the big deal. Yeah. You know, like, why? Much like, you know, Cybok, where it's like, what? How does Spock have a brother we've never really heard of before? Much like we're hearing about, you know, another sibling.
I don't think Paramount wants anyone to ever talk about Star Trek V, no. So I don't know if you should mention Cybok.
Oh, sorry. All right. There you go.
Yeah, that's the only thing that'll make them come after us.
I'd go if she's like an honorary one of... For some reason, she was allowed to stay there as a human. Because that's why they're always like, they're not like, you're Vulcan-ness. They don't point that out to her. They're more just like, stop letting your emotions.
You. So I thought it was an interesting, because look, we don't have a firm answer. No, but we'll obviously, I figure we'll see more of these flashbacks. Or maybe we won't. I don't know. But I think we'll learn more about what her story is. You know, she has a secret channel to Sarek, and she has some kind of voice recognition. Mm-hmm. So there's clearly something, you know, some strong connection to the Vulcan people.
Do you want a spoiler?
I don't know.
Don't look.
Oh, somebody has it up there. Oh, okay. I thought you were about to give it to me. I'm like, no, I don't think I do.
I saw it.
All right, I don't want to see it, so I'm not going to look. I'm going to just let it keep going up. Frank, what did you think of that sequence where we see Sarek and the questioning and... You know, I mean, obviously, it's a storytelling device to let us know that she doesn't want to talk about it.
It was a great visual, though, too.
Yeah. And I'll be curious to see as we get more flashbacks about her at that time, is that showing when Spock was growing up and certainly being of mixed Vulcan and human origins, that he was teased many times for his having being part human, having that human blood in him. So I'd be curious to see how she did in that sense, being fully human. Was she embraced by the rest of Vulcan, or... Was she kind of really kind of ridiculed and stuff? And it was basically Sarek that was the one that was just kind of...
Which, by the way, I feel like are scenes that are very well done in the J.J. Abrams movies, or when we have young Spock being bullied. And in theory, those things would have happened to young prime Spock because it's before, you know, the whole...
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Steve, let me know that the spoilers are gone. I'm still not going to look up, though, just in case.
No, they're good.
Okay.
I said stuff and then they said...
Complete aside, I was very excited. I see a note that I took while the episode was moving along that Dr. Nanny is the character's name, and he's played by the guy who was Jonathan on 30 Rock, so I was excited to see him.
Yeah.
That has very little to do with anything, but I was just like, hey, it's Jonathan! So, you know, that was good.
Wait, which character?
He's the doctor. He's like two lines when she...
When she wakes
when
up?
The first officer wants to leave sick bay. And he's like, you can't. That's Jonathan from 30 Rock. Jack Donaghy's assistant. It's, you know, it's not that exciting. But I was excited.
Maybe a descendant.
I'm surprised.
That's true, yeah.
I'm surprised there wasn't some kind of... I mean, they have all this technology that she didn't have some sort of, like, you know, Skype thing to call the bridge, like, so she could stay in there or something and be like... I know she wants to be in person and tell them the news, but, like, Skype call them and you can see it and be like, hey, I have to tell you this thing. Not, like... physically leave.
Right. I think it would have been much less dramatic.
Of course.
But you're right. From a practical standpoint, yes. Yeah,
just like her technology was...
If the Admiral can be like a 3D hologram from whatever corner of the galaxy, probably Earth, he was in, she should be able to, a few decks below, be like, hey, you know, we got to do this.
Call me back. It's important.
Right. Yeah. Totally call me back. So this was something that I referenced and I'm kind of more interested in to find out more about. This is sort of the point in the linear way I took notes that no one had seen a Klingon in 100 years. And I just feel like that's a very long time. And
It's a very long time.
Does that mean that the next series is going to be 100 years before this one, and we're going to see First Contact with Klingons? I don't know. I would actually be very interested in learning more about that. Does that surprise you at all, Frank?
Yeah, because in the pilot episode of Enterprise, we've got a Klingon.
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to...
I don't think that's 100 years before this.
Yeah. So I'm just trying to get my dates lined up, because it isn't. Yeah. That seems like... It is not 100 years.
But I guess it's just somebody speaking sort of more off the cuff. So yeah. It's, you know, it's not like the ship's computer said no one has seen a Klingon in 100 years.
Maybe not widely seen. Yeah,
that's true. And maybe they had on a hood like we referenced earlier, so no one saw them.
Right. He was in a silo in Iowa that blew up.
I liked that we see that this was the first time that I guess anyone in the Federation came across a cloaking device, because they were very surprised that all of a sudden the ship was there and there was no warp signature. That's the sort of touch that I do like, the fact that this is 10 years before the original series, that, you know, and I always thought that the Klingon Bird of Prey just looks really cool, and I thought that this one looked really cool.
I like the touch of the coffins.
Yes.
It was a nice
touch.
This is a
pretty badass Bird of Prey.
I like
that. Yeah.
And that makes, like, in a weird way, it makes sense. Like, they're still with you. Because at first I'm like, really? They're going to go to all that trouble to make that beautiful sarcophagus and send it off into outer space? Oh, no, it just stays attached to the ship. Cool.
Yeah.
I get it. It makes sense. They are your they're with you, literally. They're not going to fight, but they're a shield.
Yeah, but you're right, exactly.
They're still useful. Ha!
Frank, what did you think about this sort of being basically the first time that anybody's run into a cloaking device, and what did you think of what the Bird of Prey looked like?
I did like the Bird of Prey. It's been a while since I've watched Enterprise, but I feel like...
It's the same problem I had where I don't remember Enterprise that well, where I'm like, pretty sure that they ran into a cloaking device. But I don't know, maybe just this crew had never seen one. But
yeah.
Not common enough for it to be a first
thought. That's true.
Shot.
Yeah, but I thought that they had run into it. So, but I thought it, if that is the case, this was kind of an interesting, like, hey, remember, we're before all that stuff. Mm. Let's see. So we got to talk a little bit. We get to learn a little bit about the first officer and how his people basically withdraw from everything, and then their purpose is to let you know that death is coming, which I thought, you know, was very dramatic. Lieutenant Saro, played by Doug Jones, and I thought that that was kind of a very interesting thing, because, you know, this is someone that we don't really know, and he's sort of called out earlier for not wanting to go on the spacewalk because all they do is kind of run away. I thought that was kind of an interesting, just as a concept. You know, I mean, storytelling point, it's fairly brief. But the idea that you're basically a race of cowards who exists to let people know, no, death's really coming. But if they're a race of cowards, do you trust them? Carrie, what do you think about all that?
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel that, they had that in Grimm. There was a species that was, they're generally very scared of stuff. And I'm like, I feel I have seen that, but I can't quite put a finger on it, where it is something that can sense some other supernatural something, where it's like, yeah, they know it's coming. It was intriguing, because you're like, yeah, that makes sense. A species, I mean, it's much more elaborate than just like breeding salmon or, you know, some edible. But he made it sound like they're prey, or they're, you know, they're hunted or they're not. You're the hunter or the hunted. There we go. But then they've essentially become that. But then it's like, would you want to break out of that mold? Because it doesn't seem like he's, I don't want to be that anymore.
Yeah.
You know?
No, he's perfectly
like,
happy being who he is.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's true.
I think that's fine that they're cautionary. I would trust their advice with a grain of salt, because they're very cautious, which is good to have. And I think that's kind of the dynamic that they have right now, is they have the person who's like, we need to take action, we need to explore, this is a little too dangerous. And that really is that, you know, maybe it is a safer spot in the middle, because both sides make good arguments.
Yeah. What did you think about Lieutenant Saro's race?
Yeah, I'd be curious to see how many others of his race are in Starfleet and in what kind of capacity. Because
probably none of them die in the line of duty, because they're
taken off.
Yeah, they're like, no, we're going to go hide.
Yeah. And yeah. So while Saro, I mean, he's, I would say at least, you know, he's kind of trying to challenge his upbringing by being in an exploratory vessel.
Yeah.
Yeah,
true.
I mean, you're deliberately putting yourself in, you know, danger mm-hmm. pretty much all the time. So while his first instinct is always to kind of like, let's get the heck out of here, At least I feel like he's putting himself in a situation to try to overcome that kind of programming that he has.
Yeah, no, it's a great point, and obviously let us know what you think. Stress-free K says, while Data yearned for emotions, I fear these new aliens yearn for courage. Stress-free K adding, they may need a heart. That sounds familiar.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
I do like the makeup effects, though. I mean, Star Trek's always been like great with in terms of the alien makeups that they've done, and this is really nice.
Yeah, even in the original series when they were limited by just sort of the technology, budgetary constraints, I do think that they did a good job of what they had there. One of the things I feel like is fascinating that we kind of got sort of actually off camera was the explanation of the first time that Klingons and Vulcans interacted. You know, Sarek explains this to Burnham, and then she sort of relays it to us. But if you want to talk about something that they can go back and tell a story of, whether it be in a novel or, you know, comic book or movie, whatever, I'd certainly like to see that. The idea that Vulcans realized after one ship was destroyed, it's like, okay, we just have to shoot first, doesn't really seem like the way we think of Vulcans, but obviously these are also Vulcans, you know, somewhat earlier in the timeline, although it's only 10 years before we meet Spock. I found that to be sort of very interesting and actually a very logical approach. Like, well, they only know violence, so the only way that you have chance, oddly, of having any kind of peace with them is to just be violent right away. Carrie, did you find that interesting like I did?
It made sense, because if you do the logic step, like they said, of like violence shows, earns you respect, which gets you the peace that they're not going to keep attacking, which, I mean, in real life application, that's probably not the best way to go, but it is the, when you show weakness, you know, someone would attack you, but if you have that, maybe not active aggression, but if you have that, like, you know, air about you of like, don't mess with me, then nothing's gonna, less likely to happen. But made sense.
Yeah, look, I've never done time in prison, but in movies and TV, right, they always say,
yeah,
prison rules.
They always say that the first thing you do on your first day is you look for the biggest, strongest person, you go up and you punch them in your face, they're gonna kick your ass, but everybody's gonna be like, oh, they're crazy. They went after. So I guess that's kind of, oddly enough, that's the Vulcan
makes
way.
Yeah.
Is that what you think, Frank? That's the thinking there.
Well, because I feel like if you always kind of look at it, like the Vulcans, even though they're part of Starfleet, I feel like they've always, especially in this early iteration between like before, they're still kind of like not quite sure how much the human race is, how good they're going to be.
Yeah.
In space, I feel like they always kind of kept like some of their technology kind of reserved back for them. So I always felt like, technologically speaking, they always had a little bit more superior firepower than the Federation. And so then you've got then the Klingon Empire, which I feel like I can see the Vulcans being more of a match one-on-one against the Klingons than necessarily Starfleet at this point with the Klingons.
Yeah, because even at this point, I mean, they haven't been star-gazing, but star-faring for all that long. I mean, First Contact isn't that long before this series. So it's a great point that, you know, obviously the Vulcans and the Klingons have been at it much longer. And before we move on to talk more about the episode, I wanted to let everybody know that book clubs are back in action, and so are many other fall activities. Audiobooks are the perfect complement to your busy schedule, since you can listen while you do other things, multitasking at its best. You won't be unprepared for a book club again. If you're looking for a new book club, try the audiobook version. By listening to the story, your group conversation can go to a whole new level. For instance, discuss how the voice of the narrator impacted the story. Listen to new releases such as My Absolute Darling, a debut novel that has been getting rave reviews, The Girl Who Takes an Eye for an Eye, new in the Elizabeth Salander series, or A Column of Fire, the new Ken Follett or possibly Follett, and enjoy a whole new book club experience. Visit tryaudiobooks.com/podcast for book club suggestions, discussion questions, and a free full download of an audiobook of your whole book club or for your whole book club to listen to. Penguin Random House Audio is the premier award-winning audiobook publisher. They have 13 Grammy Awards, 69 Audi Awards, and 15 Odyssey Awards. Penguin Random House Audio is dedicated to producing top-quality fiction and nonfiction audiobooks written and read by the best in the business. You know, there's a great Star Trek tie-in to audiobooks, and it's an infamous outtake from a book that, you already know what I'm going to say. William Shatner was reading, and he said the word sabotage for the word sabotage, and the person directing it tried to correct him, and he's like, no, that's how I say it, sabotage the system. And I don't know what the end result was, but there's some great outtakes, I think, from that book. I don't know how many books that Shatner did, but, you know, so that's a tie in there. So, you know, you never know. You could get stuff like that if you just dive into the world of audiobooks. Try audiobooks.com/podcast.
Shatner's run on all those Star Trek novels that he did kind of take place after Generations. Where he does all the narration for him, fantastic. I've listened to them all. They're
really
so
great.
See,
I didn't really dive into those because the idea that he wasn't dead just I was like, well, I kind of saw him die.
You know? He was resurrected through Borg technology, Christian. Well, so you know,
all right, I sit corrected. Sorry,
I'll have to check
here?
Those out because I love audiobooks. I drive a lot. We live in LA. We do a lot of driving. We sit in our car a lot.
We're actually in traffic right now.
That's right.
In the last few minutes, I kind of want to talk about a very pivotal moment here in the pilot, and it's the simple fact that you know, Burnham, for all intents and purposes, tries to basically, it's not a mutiny where you get everybody behind you, but basically completely
solo
disregard
mutiny?
Yeah, basically disregard mutiny of one,
yeah,
disregard the captain's orders to the extent that she incapacitates her,
yeah,
and tries to do something, go direct, not just not listen to her orders, like do exactly what she says don't do. And I think that, look, to someone said that this is a little bit of a darker Star Trek, this is something that I can't imagine seeing done any of the crews that we've had on any of the series before. You know, try to imagine any first officer, you know, could you imagine Riker saying, like, you know what, I know better than Picard, I'm just gonna, you know, knock him out and, you know, just send some photon torpedoes at a ship. So I think it'll be really interesting going forward to see the ramifications. The fact that all of the Klingons show up shortly thereafter, it really heightens the tension. But the fact that this, you know, so those last couple minutes are why I'm like, well, do I want to spend $7 a month? And or maybe it's $8. And I was like, man, I could see people doing it. So, Carrie, give us your thoughts on how that all played out and how it tied into the cliffhanger.
That part was great in terms of, hold on. I need a second. Go ahead, Frank. And it's gone. Just the kind of mutiny of it. I was like, wait a minute. But then when all the Klingon ships come up, it'd almost be like, turn around and be like, can I say I told you so now?
Yeah, well, that's kind of, that was my feeling. It's like, yeah, she's probably right.
It's like, look, I said they were here. Yeah. And so that was great. Because it's one of those, like, well, but we already kind of seen the preview for next time. That's not good. But the, even before that is the moment, like, in the office of, like, you can't do that. Like, it's going to disrupt the crew. It is a very, you could go with the emotional, it's a very hasty action. But I don't even know if shooting at the ship would have done you any good when all the other ships showed up seconds later.
Yeah, you still would have had to deal with all of them.
Yeah,
but
so,
I don't know. I think that it's sort of it's the Kobayashi Maru. It's the no-win scenario.
Yeah.
You shoot at them and you try to, you know, not endear yourself to them but speak to them in their own language, or they're like, well, see, that's an act of aggression. Obviously, we need to get into war with these people. There's obviously either case can be made. Frank, what did you think of the way that played out?
Yeah, it's that mutiny was interesting. What I did like, though, is that certainly having some, you know, Vulcan roots in terms of her raising with Sarek to do the nerve pinch. But I feel like since she's just a human emulating that, doesn't quite last as long.
Yeah.
She doesn't quite do it just the right way so that, you know, the captain can still get up much more quicker than I think if a Vulcan had done that nerve pinch to be able to kind of stop this mutiny in its tracks.
Mm.
Yeah, and I'm very excited to see where that goes. I suppose that if I had CBS All Access, I would be able to watch that right now. And that's actually the question that we're going to leave everybody with. Please let us know what you think in the comments on YouTube after the fact, what you think, and we'll kind of go around. If you had no ties to AfterBuzz where you were going to be able to watch it here and you would have had to pay out of your own pocket, would this episode have convinced you to, you know what, I'm going to sign up for CBS All Access and I'm willing to pay, let's say, $8 a month for basically just this show? We're just going to assume that nobody's a fan of The Good Fight here. But, you know, basically just for this show, I'm inclined to say that I'm interested enough and but would I burn my free week on episode 2, or would I wait until they're all up? I'd probably wait till they're all up, to be completely honest, but I am pretty excited. So I say that, not having to actually make the decision, but I don't think that this would actually get me to pay for CBS All Access. Carrie, if you had to pay, would you?
I'm a binge watcher, so I agree with the thought of waiting till later. I don't know if I would pay for it.
Get the free week and watch them all.
I would do on the 1 week because, yeah. I'm like, I already pay enough for whatever else I watch. Yeah. So I'm like, not another one. Like, to be honest, that was my first impression with that. I'm like, another service I have to sign up for. So I was like, maybe not. Not any offense to the show, but more just the principle of itself.
It's the platform. Like, and look, here's the thing. There's a part of me that doesn't want CBS All Access to succeed because then you'll have NBC All Access and, you know, and obviously, you could have Fox All Access. You could have FX All Access.
Yeah, they're all going to do it. Everything. And then I'm like, so it's I'm like
everything can break up. And that's probably where they all imagine we're headed. So if this one doesn't do well, then maybe that puts the brakes on that. But, Frank, what did you think? Would you be willing to pay for this show based on this pilot?
I'm agreeing with what all of you have said, because it's not going to be 52 weeks out of the year. There's going to be these initial eight, then a little downtime, then the back half of the season. And then who knows how long it's going to be before season two, if a season two even happens. So it's like, would I want to have CBS All Access during those downtimes? Not if there's not enough like Hulu or Netflix, where there's a lot of other original content on there to kind of occupy my time. Other than The Good Fight, that's just not enough to justify it. And I also would like to know for this series, because there's been rumors it was going to be kind of an anthology. Brian Fuller kind of said, like, every year could be kind of like a different time period.
Oh, I do remember he said that. Yeah.
Whether that's the actual case now that he's not really as closely associated with the show as possible. But if it was, if they came on and said, like, you know what, every year, every season is going to kind of visit a different time period in the Federation, I think I'd be more inclined
to. If they
to
go to the future.
Yeah, if they go to post Nemesis, you'll be on board.
Or even, like you're saying, even between, Next Generation and the original series.
Yeah.
That gap, it just varies different time periods in the Federation. I'd be more curious to invest in it.
Stress Free K says, no, CBS All Access must die. But we do hope that all of you continue to watch the show, because then you'll be able to join us next week. But please let us know what you think. Did this pilot, The Vulcan Hello, did that inspire you to want to spend money on CBS All Access? Let us know on the comments, or you can tweet at any or all of us. You can find me, Christian Blatt, at ChristianDMZ. Carrie, where can people find you?
You guys can find me online at Carrie D. Lane. That's KARIDLANE.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at HappyGoJackie.
All right. Well, thank you so much for everybody who joined us for a premiere. And obviously, thanks to Carrie and Frank for joining me here for the premiere. We will see you next Sunday at 10 Pacific, which I guess is Monday at 1 a.m. And we will see you then. Live long and prosper.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.